We weren't able to prove how they were going to be able to sleep in darkness with one person flying, just you know, psychologically and whatever. We wanted to learn that, but I thought, well, you know, Shirley, you know, don't call me Shirley. Our concerns about that were really apparent in July of 1984. We still had the little O-235s in it, the wooden propellers, and we're going to bring this airplane to Oshkosh. And it's got to fly over the Rocky Mountains. And, you know, that's going to be tough because they didn't have to fly over something identical to the Rocky Mountains, except possibly Central Africa, for the entire world flight. The airplane landed in Kansas, trying to get to Oshkosh. And on the flight plan, we were going to arrive at Oshkosh with a Voyager early in the day or about midday at real high altitude. And for the whole day at Oshkosh, people could look up and see this, what looked like it's hovering because it flies so slow. Circling up there would be Voyager. The unveiling to the public of the Voyager was going to be not just an event here, it took off. No. They get to watch it all day circling. And then when it got close to air show time, it would come down and it would do a loop and a roll in the air show, right? That was the plan. It was going to be really cool. And then we find out, well, what do you mean you landed in Kansas? Did the engines quit? And why don't you tell this audience what you told me in the museum? Why did you land in Kansas?
Yeah, Bert and I have a disagreement about this.
No, we don't. Not anymore. Just tell them what you said in the museum.
Okay, well, let me tell it.
Okay, I did.
Okay, first of all, we took off at dawn to Mojave heading for Oshkosh. And I didn't want to take the airplane to Oshkosh. It was way too premature. We had two run-out Lycoming O-235s, a hand-tailed wooden propeller. We had no running lights, no cockpit lights, no landing lights. None of the things they could use to fly at night.
Who wanted to take it to Oshkosh?
This is my
turn. I was working on the Starship. I didn't have, it wasn't me. You were listening to her?
Yeah, well, there's one sentence in my book, and it says, the lead-in sentence, it says, in this, my book, I said, this is how I frickin' remember it happening. No, the thing is, it took us all day. We were just, you know, here we're going, 68 knots or something. We got over the plains, then we had these puffy clouds, and we're just getting literally beat the crap out of us.
Yeah.
And we try to keep climbing higher and higher. The fatigue, Gina would be bouncing up and down the ceiling. I was trying to fly this thing to strain relief as it being beat all over the place. And at the end of the first day when the sun was going down, it's going to take us all day to get there. But Bert, on this thing, about me flying this thing at night, my philosophy on this flight test program, this was a valuable airplane because I knew how valuable it was. I had to build the damn thing, the three of us. And so you have a good impression about what its value is. My philosophy was, I am not going to risk this airplane unnecessarily for anything. And I thought, we can do all our flight testing in the daytime. There is absolutely no reason to subject this airplane to nighttime if we have an emergency. I don't want to have emergencies at night. I hate night flying. So I just put the airplane at an unnecessary risk to do any night flying. We landed at Salina, Kansas, and I'm up at 14,000 feet, trying to stay above the turbulence. And then finally, there's Salina, and Bruce Evans went down and arranged for a hangar. And then I put all the gear down and everything, but Bert made this thing so darn efficient I couldn't get down. And so I pushed the nose down to get down, and we get into this god-awful turbulence. It's just flailing us up and down. And it took forever to get down, because if you get down faster, you'd go speed, and I'd be cussing at myself. It says, 110 knots, my God, I've never flown at this, but get the nose back up, Dick. But you can't, and then we're not going down, and we're getting beat up. Bruce Evans went down there to find us a smooth trail to get into Salina. He says, Dick, there ain't no smooth trail. Good luck. And that was a hideous descent to get down and land the airplane. And I was mentally and physically totally spent when I landed. And I tell the story about kicking a hole in the wing tank, throwing a match on it, followed by my pilot's license, and taking a damn train home and forget about this
whole
aviation.
Okay, thank you for that. Okay, now let me go back to my story about, is it probable, is this flight going to be probable? Okay, our inability to get the flight partially due to crew fatigue.
No crew fatigue.
It's not true.
That's not true.
When you found yourself every time in turbulence late in the day, you came down and landed rather than fly into the night. And I understand your rationale about you didn't want to risk it, okay? But you guys were really tired. And this is not something you should argue about, Dick. It's not negative for you. But the possibility of them being able to handle that we had on their capabilities indicated to us the flight was not going to be possible without, certainly not going to do it the first time. And of course, every day as Voyager went further into that, the ground crew was, my God, they may make it, right? But there were folk who thought they'd land in Hawaii, folk that thought they would land in the Philippines, folk that thought that they would land in Thailand because of crew fatigue. They didn't want to tell you that because you get pissed off at them just like you did with me when I mentioned.
Let me tell you
but
something.
But they're your friends, Dick. They were not doing something negative to you. They were telling us that we were very concerned that you couldn't do it. And the fact that you did do it, my God, high five, baby.
Okay, I'll give you this, that you had every reason to believe that this thing would fail from crew fatigue.
Yeah.
We had worked on this thing. People do different things mainly because if you got an exciting goal in mind and you manage the motivation right, you can do anything as long as you manage the motivation for yourself, for your team, for everybody. And there were times when I was really hurting on maintaining motivation during this whole program. And what I would do is I'd go out and I'd sit on the ramp and I'd put my head back against the hangar floor, hangar 77, and I'd look out on the ramp, and when I want to quit, all I had to do was cast in my mind and let this thing permeate into my psyche and try to imagine what it would feel like to land at Edwards Air Force Base having accomplished the last aviation milestone. And you know something? I thought that would feel pretty damn good.
Okay.
And it was, wait a minute, and there was no way when I took off that I was going to quit. That thing had been on fire. I didn't care. Okay.
My brother.
We were going to fly it around the world, and there was no way that Dick Rutan was going to quit, period.
My brother has the typical confidence of a fire-breathing fighter pilot. And he says he can do anything under pressure, he will do it. Okay? But if I read her book, the book called Voyager.
Forget that book.
There's a time in there when you thought that she had died.
Yes, I did.
Okay? So don't talk to me about
now, that's
you
her.
Not being concerned about the ability of humans to do this, because I read it in her book. Now, I am glad as hell that you are writing a nonfiction version of her book.
Now, let me tell you this one quick thing about
I'm complimenting
this.
You, Dick. Take
I know
take
you
it
did.
As a
this, but the this, fact
this is a
the
an,
fact that you even thought
compliment.
That Dick Rutan would quit cuts me. Okay, here we are. Gina cannot fly the airplane. I sat in the seat for three nights. We flew. I sat in the seat going into the fourth night. 3 days, three nights. Never got out of the seat once. And to sleep, I just took little cat naps to keep the W and the compass and keep heading west. The first time I got out of the seat was going into the Philippines. Gina could not talk on the radio. She couldn't work any of the equipment. She couldn't read the radar. Refused to do any of that over my insistence that she do that. Please, I can't fly this airplane by yourself. You got to learn this stuff. She refused to do any of it. And I threatened to replace her. And she says, you either take me or I'll burn the airplane. I didn't want to go to jail. Okay, after, just think about the really small amount of sleep. The first time I after got out and laid down on the floor for maybe an hour and a half, for the very first time going to the Philippines, she shook my legs and she said, there's something wrong. And she said, the airplane won't hold heading anymore. And so looking over my head, she moved out of the way, and I could see that the attitude indicator was level, but we were in about a 4-degree bank turn going back. The damn attitude indicator had failed. But there was a high failure mode with that particular instrument, and very rarely did we take anything of backup. If it came there, it had a bloody work. No backup. But we did take a backup attitude indicator, and I had to spread my legs apart. She would get on her back underneath, between my legs, and up underneath the instrument panel.
You didn't get a picture of this.
No. No, and we practiced that on the ground about changing those things off. And so we were trained up on that.